The Years of Lyndon Johnson, Means of Ascent, by Robert A. Caro, concluded, Cassette 14, Side 2. Written documents can never tell the whole story, of course, and as in the first volume, I have also relied heavily on interviews with the men and women closest to Lyndon Johnson during the 7 years covered by this volume. 13 of the men and women who were during these years particularly close to Lyndon Johnson were alive when I began work on this book, and I have interviewed all of them, most of them in repeated lengthy interviews. They are George R. Brown, Horace Busby, Edward A. Clarke, John B. Connolly, Thomas G. Corcoran, Helen Gehagen Douglas, Abe Fortas, Welly K. Hopkins, Walter Jenkins, Gene Latimer, Mary Rather, James H. Rowe Jr., and Warren G. Woodward. Busby and Woodward came to Johnson's staff later than the rest of this group, only during the last year of this period, but were quickly put on an intimate footing with him. During this time, Johnson's two principal assistants in his congressional office were Connolly and Jenkins, both of whom joined his staff in 1939. Jenkins, who succeeded Connolly as Johnson's administrative aide during this period, had helped me greatly with his recollections on the first volume. For this volume, he continued his detailed assistance until his final illness. He died in November 1985. Connolly refused during the entire period of research on my first volume even to respond to requests for an interview. Some 2 years after it was published, however, Governor Connolly said he had read the book and now wanted to talk to me at length. He told me that the only way in which he could free the requisite block of uninterrupted time would be at his ranch in South Texas. For 3 days there we talked, from early in the morning until quite late at night, about his 30-year association with Lyndon Johnson. Governor Connolly told me that he would answer any question I put to him without exception. He was true to his word and discussed with me, as indeed he also did at a subsequent lengthy interview, with considerable and sometimes startling frankness, perhaps a score of pivotal events in Lyndon Johnson's life in which he was a key participant. His interviews were especially valuable because, in more than one case, he is the only participant in those events still alive. I am all the more grateful to him because his silence about some of these events that he broke in talking to me was a silence that had lasted for decades. During his years as a congressman in Washington, Johnson was part of a quite remarkable group of young men and women. Benjamin V. Cohen, Thomas G. Corcoran, Helen Gehagen Douglas, Abe Fortas, Arthur Goldschmidt, Elliot Janeway, James H. Rowe Jr., and Elizabeth Wickenden Goldschmidt. These men and women, once the bright young New Dealers, gave me their time with varying degrees of generosity, but some of them were very generous indeed, and when the meaning of documents in the library was not clear, they often made it clear. These men and women had ringside seats at Lyndon Johnson's rise to power. Perceptive as they are, they understood what they were watching, and they can explain it. The greatest single loss to my research, in my opinion, came with the death of Abe Fortas after I'd had only a single interview with him. But even in that one interview, he explained things for which I would otherwise have had no explanation. If many of the names above are known to readers familiar with American political history, the name of Edward A. Clarke is not. The only high public position he ever held was as United States Ambassador to Australia during Lyndon Johnson's presidency. Because I rely on his recollections quite as much as on those of the more famous figures, however, I feel I should identify him. In 1936, this canny politician was already not only Texas Secretary of State, but Chief Political Advisor to Governor James V. Allred. 20 years later, in 1953, as the most powerful lawyer and lobbyist in Austin, he was named the Secret Boss of Texas by the Reader's Digest. 30 years after that, in 1982, he was still identified as one of the 20 most powerful Texans. Of all the men with whom Lyndon Johnson would be allied in Texas, Clarke was the one who would, over the long years to come, acquire and hold the most power in that state. More to the point, so far as my work is concerned, he was Brown and Root's lawyer, and for 20 years Lyndon Johnson's. When I finished the first volume of this work, I wrote that, over a period of more than 3 years, Mr. Clarke devoted evening after evening to furthering my political education. During these past 7 years, the education has continued to my benefit. It is necessary, I think, to repeat in this note the note I made in Volume 1 about Lady Bird Johnson and my work. Lady Bird Johnson prepared carefully for our 10 interviews, reading her diaries for the years involved so that she could provide a month-by-month detailed description of the Johnsons' life. Some of these were lengthy interviews, particularly one in the living room of the Johnson Ranch that, as I recall, it lasted most of a day. These interviews were immensely valuable in providing a picture of Lyndon Johnson's personal and social life and of his associates, for Mrs. Johnson is an extremely acute observer and has the gift of making her observations, no matter how quietly understated, quite clear. The interviews were less valuable in regard to her husband's political life. In later years, Mrs. Johnson would become familiar with her husband's work, indeed perhaps his most trusted confidant. During this earlier period, Mrs. Johnson was not familiar with much of the political maneuvering in which her husband was engaged, as she herself points out. Once when I asked if she had been present at various political strategy sessions, she replied, "Well, I didn't always want to be a part of everything, because I elected to be out a lot. I wasn't confident in that field. I didn't want to be a party to absolutely everything." Although from the first I made it clear to Mrs. Johnson that I would conduct my own independent research into anything I was told by anyone, for some time she very helpfully advised members of the semi-official Johnson Circle in Texas that she would have no objection if they talked with me. At a certain point, however, some time after the interviews with Mrs. Johnson had been completed, that cooperation abruptly and totally ceased. This concludes the reading of The Years of Lyndon Johnson, Means of Ascent, by Robert A. Caro. This book was read by Grover Gardner. Additional titles by Robert A. Caro in the Books on Tape Library include The Years of Lyndon Johnson, The Path to Power. For additional information about this or for help with topics of related interest, please call our customer service department or check our catalog index to find review material. Will you please wind or rewind the tape as appropriate so the book will be in order for the next person to enjoy? Thank you.